When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe it. USC is 7-5 again. Oh no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Raider Troy Radio, episode 527, coming to you on Friday, December 22nd. We're going to preview the 2023 Holiday Bowl, USC and Louisville, the Louisville Cardinals. For the first time ever, the Trojans and the Cardinals meeting in San Diego at Petco Park. We're also going to look back at signing day, which happened on Wednesday, early signing day, along with some transfer portal stuff and so much more here on this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy, email address, rainoftroyfansite.com, and our phone number, 818-643-7227. Second What's Brewing Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Lisa Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We say Second What's Brewing Show because of the phone number. Little inside baseball and Rain of Troy origin story. When we used to record this when I lived out of state, it was hard for us to do it in sync. And our friends over at the What's Brewing Show could do their number in sync. And so they did it to mock us and would say, suck it, Rain of Troy. So we just have done the favor back. But we're going to talk about this later. I think that the other person who's been saying suck it, What's Brewing Show is Danton Lynn.
Yeah, that's an understatement. I have to admit, this signing day, this season and this signing day have not been the brightest moments for USC football. There's been a lot to be critical of and there's a lot to be down on.
Yeah.
But I will say it would be way worse to be a UCLA fan right now. It would be way, way, way worse to be a UCLA fan. And sorry, What's Brewing Show, but I am glad I'm not in their shoes, even though, you know, everything's not not comfy cozy for USC all the time, but
certainly not.
Yeah.
Certainly not. The Trojans 7-5 on the season, a season that had a lot of hopes for going to the playoff and so much more. But alas, the Trojans are having to settle for the Holiday Bowl. But at least it's close. You don't even really have to get a hotel. You don't even have to make it a one night sleep over down in San Diego, but you could be a sleeper over on Daly Sleeper Daily Fantasy, which hosts fantasy prop games, and you can compete for a chance to win cash prizes. The game is simple. For each contest, you're given a pool of props for upcoming games across different sports. You can pick whether each prop will be over or under the given total, and you can choose up to 8 different props for a chance at a bigger win. If you want to join in on the action, we've got you covered. Sign up with the promo code FANSIDE2 today. Receive a deposit match of up to $100 using the code FANSIDED2, all one word, FANSIDED, the number 2. When signing up, not only gives you the great reward, but helps to support this very podcast. So make sure you use the code FANSIDED2 when you sign up. If you're watching this on YouTube, there's a little QR code in the lower right hand side, right underneath Alicia, right there. Yep, there it is. Get your phone out, take a little picture, zoom in on the QR code. Not Alicia, probably, and go to Sleeper and join. The offer, of course, available to new customers who are 18 plus and physically present in valid states. Please remember to always game responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer. Alicia, there's a lot to get to in this episode. I am looking forward to this episode because this is what I'm someone who likes to listen to podcasts while I drive. How many people do you think are going to be listening to this while heading down the Holiday Bowl?
Hey, it might be the perfect length to get you down to San Diego if our rundown is any.
Depends. It depends.
It depends on what time of day you are driving down to San Diego. And that is true.
And what the traffic is looking like around Pendleton or Oceanside, San Onofre. It always, San Clemente, it always gets really, really weird down there. But here we go. It's going to be a long episode, so we got a lot to get to. Let's start with the news. By the way, if you are listening on your way down there, send us a tweet. Hit us up with an email, something. Let us know if you're listening to us while you're heading down to the game. That stuff's always cool to hear. So let's get to the news, shall we?
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, before we get to the Holiday Bowl, which I promise we will talk about, we got to start with signing day. The Trojans signed a bunch of dudes, I think 19 signees in the early signing day window, which opened up on Wednesday. Obviously, signing day, if you're new to college football, does not end on Wednesday. It's just the day that it starts, but everybody gets it in usually on that first day. Let's talk about the Trojans' new players for the class of 2024. On offense, led by Jason Zandamela, 4-star offensive lineman. Only one receiver in the class, that's Xavier Jordan, a 4-star. Tight end Walter Matthews. And then 3-star lineman Makai Sena. Justin Tuanu. Tight end Joey Olson. Offensive lineman Kalolo Taga. Running back Brian Jackson and offensive lineman Hayden Treader.
Yeah, this is I really like the substance of this class. The offensive linemen in particular, USC has loaded up on offensive linemen who definitely bring really strong size to the mix. The more recent addition to Aga is 6 foot seven. 6 foot seven, 265. He's got a frame to put on some weight. Mm-hmm. Sayanai and Tanu are getting close to 300. Trader is 300, at least in his current stat. I mean, what he's currently listed as. That's, you got to like the size that USC is bringing in. You got to like the evaluations that USC is bringing in. With those linemen, obviously Zandamela is the big one. Mm-hmm. He's the one that you really need to come in and hit on. But when it comes down to it, USC has very clearly bulked up quite a bit here, not just on the offensive line, but, you know, Walter Matthews, the tight end, is 6 foot seven. So he's a 6'7", 265. He's a big dude. He's a big tight end. The running back Brian Jackson is 240, 6 foot 240. He is a bruiser. I think it's interesting and notable that USC has on offense certainly gone with a little more poundage here. And I think there's a ton to like about this group. I think it's a nice mix of really quality signees in like the top 250 guys in Xavier Jordan, the wide receiver, Walter Matthews, the tight end, and Zandamela, the offensive lineman. And then some guys who you can sort of see as developmental prospects, as guys who USC might hit on, you know, on a few of them and have them come up and not necessarily be surprises, but be players that you build some foundations around because you build them up. And I think that's the thing that I'm taking. We'll talk a lot more about that too with the defense. But what I'm taking from this recruiting class is, and there is a very valid criticism of the lack of star power in this recruiting class.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very, very valid criticism of the player, the battles, the specific individual battles that USC lost in this recruiting class as being a problem. There's a very, very valid criticism of the local recruits that USC wasn't even in battles for in the first place, coming out of Mater Dei, you know, and other places. But when you look at the substance of this class, I think this is a very, could be the kind of class that you build your foundations upon, because it hits every position that you need with the profile of players that you need, the size that you need to really start to build up. And what you need from this class is to prove that you can develop. And where I am at with USC in recruiting is, I'm not going to stress USC not getting five stars if every December we're talking about this five star is transferring, this five star is transferring, this five star is transferring. And it's not a big deal because they didn't do much at USC anyways.
Yeah.
So yes, I want to see USC be bringing in the five-star guys, be bringing in the really strong local recruits. That is absolutely something that I need to see USC do. But where I'm focusing on is, I really don't care who you add in the recruiting class if you can't then turn them into viable players who are successful at USC because they have been developed at USC. So what I like from this class is just particularly with the offensive line is, this is another, last year's offensive line class was the same. This is another offensive line class that is rebuilding a bare cupboard.
Yeah.
And in 2025, I think there's a very real chance that USC starts to see serious growth on the offensive line, if they can bring these guys through, have some continuity, and get them ready to play.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how it all comes to be. Like, it's a lot like the offensive line stuff is the slow play, right? It's the long game, because these guys are probably not a bunch of dudes you're going to see as true freshmen in 2024. Maybe Zandamela can end up playing a role somewhere. I don't know.
But you don't want him to.
You ideally you don't want him to, but like SC's got to replace three starters on the line, right? Yeah. Like, and we're going to get to the transfer portal stuff, but like the Trojans haven't brought in an offensive lineman on the transfer portal yet. So these guys might end up having to play a big role. So we'll see there. Two tight ends, I think is interesting. Walter Matthews and Joey Olsen, but it's really three because Walker Lionstein last year went on a Mormon mission. He's currently in Norway, but he's expected to join the Trojans in the fall. So three tight ends there. So SC doesn't get many receivers, only one, Xavier Jordan from Sierra Canyon, but Walker Lyons in from Folsom next year in the fall will be interesting there.
One thing to say on the tight ends, because this is the most, I think that's the most intriguing position in recruiting for USC.
Yeah. Especially Matthews, 6'7", it's a big dude.
265. I think this is a very good sign for those who want to see USC use the tight end more.
Mm-hmm.
USC is continuing to recruit tight ends. And also I think they've added some guys who you can imagine not just being like Deuce Robinson ended up just being a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Lake McCree is, I think a very fun receiving target, but maybe doesn't have the ability to be a really straightforward, like blocking tight end. And yeah. I think that maybe that's what USC is looking at here with some of the guys that they've been recruiting, to bring in a freshman who's already got 20 pounds on Lake McCree tells me that they are looking for a little bit more of that element in the guys that they're bringing in. Lyons is pretty big too, right? Like,
I don't have it in front of me because he was last year, but yeah, there's definitely size there. Really quick before we move on to the defense, the big omission here is Ryan Pelham, who flipped to Oregon. Big loss for SC because he was someone that, you know, SC certainly valued, a local prospect out of Milliken in Long Beach. Thoughts there? Like, you've made the point that SC has more wide receiver coaches than commitments. They only get Xavier Jordan in this group, but Pelham would have been nice, and SC loses them to a conference rival.
Yeah, you can't lose these battles to Oregon, and there will be a lot of I like the new term that I keep seeing everywhere. A lot of copium going on when it comes to the flip of Ryan Pelham to Oregon, and I understand that. USC Lincoln Riley has made it clear that they want to prioritize guys who want to live and breathe USC and being at USC. And my take on guys who flip and guys who don't end up committing to USC is I also want guys who want to be Trojans. Like, I think that is important to me, but one of the skills you have to have as a recruiter is to figure out how to convince these guys to
want to be Trojans.
And the fact that USC has two wide receivers coaches, and it's not just about losing Pelham at the last minute to a conference rival. It's about not being in the mix for some other, you know, big wide receiver targets in the area. Like, it's about the broader picture of recruits that USC has lost to Oregon in general. It's not just wide receiver. It's at a lot of different places. So that can't happen. That is a bad sign. That is a bad way to frame your signing day. It's why USC recruiting is taking a beating right now, because Oregon has, Connor Morissette wrote a really good article on USAPopal.com just about Oregon is winning all of these battles. That can't happen. You need to do better. That doesn't mean that USC's recruiting is entirely in the dumps. I think that's probably an overreaction, but that's a bummer. And that's the kind of thing that USC should not let happen.
Yeah. The there's a lot of frustrations with NIL stuff that's been noted in the comments. I think a lot of people have been frustrated with that and thinking that, you know, SC isn't playing the NIL game enough. But like we talked about on Monday, I think every school sort of talks about that because it's so new. You got to figure out how to do it. And it's so new and everything that so much is going to change there. The other side of it is, and Oregon, I know this is a bitter pill to swallow, but for people, but over the lifetime of these recruits' lives, Oregon has been the better program.
Mm-hmm.
Like the days of just like banking on all the local talent going to SC strictly because they're local and they grew up watching Reggie Bush and everybody is over. Like the kids who are signing now weren't born.
They don't remember Reggie Bush.
When Reggie Bush was at USC, like literally weren't born. So yeah, like the teams that they remember growing up were like the 2015 Trojans.
Yeah.
What do you think of that team? You know what I mean?
Well, this is also why it does stand out when USC loses wide receivers, because if there was one position group over the last 10 years
receiver, yeah,
that I can point to that they should all be idolizing USC dudes, it's wide receivers. So yeah, like in that sense, but no, you're right. Like Oregon has the advantage of being just a far more stable program than USC for the last decade. And USC is fighting against that tide, and right, they need everybody in the ship to be paddling as strong as they can. And I think that when you look at maybe some of the recruiting stuff that's going on, like it's hard to say if it's a failure of the people who are out there recruiting, or if it's a failure of the NIL landscape that USC does. I'm on the record as saying, you know, the rumor is that USC is prioritizing transfer portal money for NIL as opposed to high school money for NIL.
Yeah.
And I'm on the record that I think that's a reasonable stance. Especially if that was the make or break for a wide receiver. I think my bigger concern is if it's the make or break for an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman, you shell out the money for a high school kid. But for a receiver, yeah, I get it. If it's not comparable, I don't know.
Yeah, let's go over to defense. The Trojans on defense bring in Marcellus Williams, cornerback. Cameron Fountain, edge rusher out of Booker T. High in Atlanta, Georgia. Carlin Jones, four-star out of Bay City, Texas. He committed to the Trojans just this past week. Elijah Newby, four-star linebacker out of Connecticut. There's Marquis Gallegos. Desmond Stevens, who is a linebacker, listed as an athlete, but linebacker is probably where you're going to end up seeing him. There's Jide Abasiri. We've talked about him with the great name.
Wonderful name.
Abasiri from Prior Lake, Minnesota. He's a three-star. Jarvis Boatwright, safety. Alicia, you know what that means, right?
Starboard is back, baby.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
The worst nickname in the history.
It's
of
no,
nicknames.
It's not. No, it's not. It's not. It's not. It's not. It's not. Okay. It's not. It's not.
Okay.
Braylon Conley, corner, three-star corner out of Humble, Texas. And then edge rusher Lorenzo Cowan out of Savannah, Georgia. That is the USC class as it stands right now. The Trojans ranked 20th in the country. And, you know, not where you want to rank if you're USC, knowing the ability of this program the last 25 years, right? And the really since what, 2003, that we call the recruiting era, when all the websites kind of sort of go back to have strong data going back to 2003. 20 is one of the historically worst recruiting classes USC has had. But the reality is you're going to be judged by what these guys do on the field. And it comes down to actually developing them, because Stars matter 1,000%. At the same time, USC has not developed the stars when they've gotten them. So find a way to develop your players, whether they're five stars or three stars. And that was going to be the key to winning if you're USC right now.
Yeah, USC should be expecting to have a top 10 recruiting class every year.
Yeah.
It's a little bit hard to evaluate. There may be, to be fair, there may be some adjusting that we need to do as sort of fans and observers when it comes to the rankings, because the additions to your roster every year are
you moving the field goal post?
No. I'm not trying to move the field goal post. But what I'm saying is that USC can have, I agree with it, like being number 20 in for the majority of my life as a fan would be terrible, which is not good. You want to be top 10.
Right.
But I can stomach being 20 quite a bit more when I know what's coming in the transfer portal. And like factoring in a 20th rating recruiting class with what you add in the portal and all of that kind of stuff. Like, I think there's a little bit more nuance to where USC ranks, particularly with this defensive group, considering that USC had a miserably bad last couple of years in on defense. The staff has been, you know, the Walking Dead this whole time, this whole fall, recruiting guys. A new DC comes in, new staffers come in, and USC is able to pull together the caliber of defensive class that we have here. And this, the defensive class, I really, really like. The defensive linemen, both of them are exactly the profile of defensive linemen that I want USC to be looking at. Bigger guys for that defensive front, because we know that USC needs to bulk up defensively up front. Holding on to someone like Cameron Fountain, who, if you don't follow his mom on Twitter, you should. She's maybe the most diehard USC mom that I've seen around in a long time. And holding on to Marcellus Williams despite losing Dante Williams, having the linebackers that USC has coming in with this class, I really, and the safeties, I like the makeup of this. Again, it's a very good mix of, you've got four guys who are top 25 guys, top 250 guys, mm-hmm. And then some really solid prospects as three stars that check the boxes physically, that check the boxes in terms of potential. That again, it comes down to, can you develop them?
Yeah.
And it all, like, to me, again, it's develop these guys and you'll bring in the next tier of recruits to get you back up into the top 10 of recruiting, and develop these guys and then supplement the spots where you might have missed with transfer portal guys. And I think you can create a winning formula.
Yeah.
It just comes down to where these guys are at on December 22nd, 2023 is pretty irrelevant to me. It's where they are December 2025 that will tell me whether or not this was a successful recruiting class or not, because I don't care if it's ranked 20th right now if you have a bunch of really foundational standout starters in this group when all is said and done.
Yeah. When it comes to high school recruiting and transfer portal recruiting, it's a por qué no los dos situation. Yeah. I think you want to be able to do well in both. You want to go out and find the guys that maybe you weren't looking at originally and who have proven it, or who you lost battles with, or who you had connections with, but couldn't convince, whatever the argument is, someone who, has a coaching change or whatnot. You want to be able to go out and get those guys in the transfer portal. At the same time, you want to be able to build your foundations. I always think of Gerard over at USCFootball.com talking about the brick and the mortar, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you want your mortar to be the high school, guys in the sense of like, you want that, like you're, that's the foundation that, that puts everything together. But the bricks are the big gets, whether the 5 stars from high school or the 5-star potential guys from the transfer portal. Before we get to the transfer portal, I want to give a couple big thank yous to some super chats we got. Dan says, happy holidays, Reign of Troy. Thank you. And then we got another one from Funny on MC, which says, Merry Christmas to all. Yeah, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. I hope everyone who celebrates whatever you celebrate, Festivus, of course, tomorrow. Hope you're all enjoying a happy Festivus tomorrow.
Cheers.
Yeah, Hanukkah's over. Kwanzaa's coming up. A lot of things going down. Absolutely. All right, let's get to the transfer portal stuff. Alicia, we talked about in the open. USC is going to have to be renamed. We talked about, actually, Southern Cal. You know, remember, you know, Southern Cal technically means UCLA, right? Mm-hmm. Like Southern Cal. UCLA's original name was University of California Southern Branch. So Southern Cal technically means UCLA. I think SC's got to bring Southern Cal back. Because the Trojans are just absolutely just pillaging over in Westwood. The Trojans have gotten 2 commitments in the transfer portal from 2 DBs, big names. Kamari Ramsey, the 3rd highest rated Bruin, according to Pro Football Focus this year. Safety, 3 years to play. 3 years of eligibility left. He had a pick, 40 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, and 4 PBUs as a redshirt freshman for the Bruins in 2023. Then there's John Humphrey, who has 1 year left, a senior. This past season, 2 picks, 31 tackles, 3 PBUs, a PFF rating of 79. So just 1 point back of Kamari Ramsey. But Ramsey's got the term. Both of those guys solidly rated. SC needs help in the secondary. Absolutely. These are guys who Danton Lynn knows how to use. Yeah, like, why not? Continuing the tradition of starting your academic career at UCLA and finishing at USC, something that is, you know, happened for decades.
Yeah, and both of these guys, you got to love it because Danton Lynn has had proven results with both of them. And having them come in and be able to help everybody else on this defense learn the new scheme, learn how to deal with this new defensive coordinator and all that kind of stuff. Having 2 guys who are already familiar with it all coming in is big, especially for the secondary. Kamari Ramsey is you can't overstate how massive of a pickup that is, because you don't just get him for 2024. You get him for 2025 as well.
Yeah.
He's not just a rental. He's there for a couple of years to be the foundational piece for this defense under Danton Lynn. He was outstanding. He was
only downside really quick. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Cutting you off here. I know people don't like when I cut you off. Yes. You get him for 2025. He's got technically three years of eligibility left. Only downside though. He's draft eligible after 2024. So if he's as good as everyone says he is, he could be one and done.
Yeah. Well, in any case, there's the chance that he continues his career, and you get guys who know what they're about in this system. And I think that's just, that's huge. And you get guys that UCLA didn't want to lose.
Mm-hmm.
UCLA didn't want to lose either of these guys. UCLA fans aren't sitting like UCLA fans are sitting there right now talking about USC stealing all their guys the way that USC is talking about Oregon stealing all their guys. Like,
right. It's
that's
they're nesting dolls, right?
Yes, like, yes, exactly.
Everyone's eating up on somebody else.
And USC is losing Damani Jackson. USC is losing, USC's secondary is losing some big names and they have some big gaps to fill. And I think the exciting thing for me here is that you can start to see the defense come together with Akili Arnold and Kamari Ramsey as your starting safeties, presumably in 2024, could not be a bigger upgrade over what USC was fielding this year or last year.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you've got now Kamari Ramsey and Akili Arnold as the perfect guys, in my opinion, to foster and grow somebody like Zion Branch, who you want to see also continue to come through and be more and more of a feature of this defense. To have those guys there to put him under their wings, I think it's going to be awesome. I'm excited.
Yeah, let's talk about the other two guys SC got, also from the same school. It's like Noah's Ark, 2x2, two Bruins, Humphrey and Ramsey, and then two Bulldogs, Mississippi State Bulldogs, running back Jaquavius Marks, Jaquavius Woody Marks, nicknamed Woody, a PFF rating of 82.0, which is pretty solid, 3,108 career yards from scrimmage. In his time in Starkville, 27 touchdowns, 573 rushing yards, and 4 TDs this past year. Really, truly an all-purpose back, especially under Mike Leach, back before Mike Leach unfortunately left us. Highlighted by 83 catches in 2021. He has 214 career catches as a running back. For reference, no USC running back in school history has more than 116 all time. And Alicia, welcome. This is time for Michael's Reign of Troy trivia minutes. Can you name any of the top 10 USC pass catching running backs? I've amassed a list of 10. I unfortunately spoiled who number one was to you earlier.
And so number one is going to be a treat for the folks in the chat, the folks who are listening at home or watching at home. You will get some time to ponder number one as I go through the rest, because I'm just not going to say that person's name.
Okay.
Okay. So what are we doing? Top 10?
Top 10.
Okay. I'm doing Reggie Bush.
Pass catchers. Yes. Number two, 95.
Buck Allen.
Tied for eighth with 63.
Okay. Justin Davis.
Not on the list.
Really?
Okay. Not on the list.
Let's go with Joe McKnight.
Number seven, 66 catches.
Okay. Maybe it's somebody from left field like CJ Gable.
Not on the list.
Oh, okay.
Nope.
Let's see. Running backs, pass catching running backs. Could be something silly like Lendell White.
No, not on the list. No.
Okay.
Nope.
I'm running short of guys who I associate with catching the ball.
I'll give you one hint. One of them is think of someone who would have been around for 4 years.
That's what I was trying to do with CJ Gable. Okay. I'm just gonna throw out something. This is not the answer to the 4 years guy. I know this. Justin Fargas?
No. Surely not an answer to the 4 year guy. That's he was a transfer from Michigan.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. That just is
you name. Should know he went to Notre Dame.
That
was
the name that popped into my head. I knew that. Oh, Ronald Jones. Thank you, West Texas Mike in the chat.
Ronald Jones not on the list. No.
Okay, Jim.
Russ in the chat is nailed number one.
Yes, Russ in the chat is nailed number one.
Number one is Stanley Avili with 116.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, which I absolutely love.
I think that if I was trying to go through this list and think, like, could I have named, how many of the top 10 could I have named? I think I would have guessed Avili or Bush is number one. So I think I could have got it.
What about my guy, Bavai Malapai?
Not on the list.
Damn it.
Okay, so of the guys that you have not named, I think there's only one that you should get. The other ones, I'm pretty sure, like, you'll have heard of their names, but there's no way you're getting that.
Curtis McNeil?
No.
Yeah, I'm going to give one last one before I give up.
Okay.
Said where?
No, not on the list. No. Okay. No. Okay, I'll go reverse order. 10 is Willie Brown, 62.
Okay, see, and I knew I was focusing too much on this century. I should have gone with like the classics of further back.
Tied for eighth with Buck Allen is the original number five, Rodney Sermons.
That's a good 63
catches. Joe McKnight, you said at number seven, 66 catches. Deion Schruther, 68 catches.
Yeah, it's not gonna get that one.
Number five, one of my all-time favorite Trojans, an incredible name. A name that I loved as a child so much that I named a fake player after him. Malifa McKenzie.
Oh, okay, good.
76 catches. That's Prince Malifa McKenzie. Prince King? What? He was Prince King something. He was something.
Prince sounds right, but don't quote me on it.
Number four, the one you should have gotten, Marcus Allen.
Yeah, that's, again, I was 79 catches. On the modern, because I was I was sort of putting the modern game with running backs pass catching.
Number three, Rod Sherman, 83.
Okay.
Number two, Reggie Bush, 95. And number one, Stanley Havili, 116 catches. If you're saying he wasn't a running back, he was a fullback. I mean, fair, but like fullbacks are running backs, are they not? They're
he's a back.
He's a back, yeah. So Jaquavis Marks, big get for USC, right?
I love this. I really, really love this. What Mike Leach did with him is plug him straight in at USC and let him get to work. The other thing I really love about this is when USC went sort of scouting around the transfer portal for running backs, there was a potential for a question around, well, does adding another veteran running back mean, you know, you're plugging up the opportunities for guys like Quentin Joyner and Amarion Peterson?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's what this does. I think you can have some coexistence in terms of skill set and touches and all that kind of stuff between those guys with somebody like Marks coming in and still getting opportunities for Joyner and Peterson, because I just think stylistically there's some difference there. So really, really like it. Extremely high rated on PFF, which take it for what it's worth, but he was, you know, doing his job.
Yeah, I love this idea. I think that they're absolutely, I'm trying not to read into him too much of as a pass catcher. But I love the idea, though I do slightly get worried. Is this just not another Relique Brown situation?
No, because he's like,
it can't be
5'10", 200 pounds. Like,
well, it can't be because they knew what they were getting, right? Yeah. And then the other side of it is he only caught like 23 passes this past season. The offense did change for Mississippi State this past year without Leach. So yeah, like I don't think that Marks is a guy whose only value is catching the ball out of the backfield. That's not the case.
Between the tackle. Like he can be USC's RB1 running between the tackle. He's not like a big bruiser. That's for sure. But like he's not also undersized at all.
Right. The other guy from Mississippi State, DeCarlos Nicholson, cornerback. A rating of 71.5 from PFF, 42 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 2 PBUs as a senior. So he'll have 1 year to play for the Trojans in 2024. All told, you look at the transfer portal guys, a lot of DBs. John Humphrey, Kamari Ramsey, Akili Arnolds, and now DeCarlos Nicholson.
Yeah, they're getting started, but they USC realistically here needs defensive linemen. They need defensive linemen.
Yeah.
They need size on the defensive line. You know, they've added Nate Clifton. It's good start, but it has to only be a start. That should be the area that we're still looking around and thinking, okay, USC is going to be targeting some beef on the defensive front. And if they, if they don't, that'll be slightly disappointing, to be honest.
Yeah. Would it be prime?
Prime rib.
or Wagyu, maybe some A5 beef.
A.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
Hey, there's some A5 beef out there in the portal. So
we will see if the Trojans can land the marbling. Anyways, let's get to the Holiday Bowl. 43 minutes in, we're going to get comments on YouTube of, I waited 45 minutes to get to the preview. You said this was the preview, and then you haven't talked about the preview yet. Here we are. USC and Louisville. Holiday Bowl, December 27th, 5:14 p.m., according to the media guide, Pacific time on Big Fox. It's going to be Gus and Klatt on the call. The Louisville Cardinals, 10-3 ACC runner-ups. Head coach Jeff Brohm, the Cardinal legend, legendary Cardinal quarterback. Not the most famous Louisville Cardinal quarterback of all time. You know who that one is?
Lamar Jackson?
I mean, I guess right now, yes.
I'm not sure where you're going.
It's Johnny Unitas, man.
Okay. Oh,
it's
okay.
Johnny Unitas.
Of course, Johnny Unitas.
Yeah, but yes. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
You're not wrong. Yeah. But yeah, Brohm, probably their third most famous quarterback.
Yeah.
Of course, Jack Plummer will try to usurp maybe a little bit here. In the polls, the Cardinals right there in the middle, 15th in the coaches, 16th in the college football playoff poll, and 16th by the AP. SP Plus, 23rd in the country. Pretty consistent. 32nd ranked offensive SP Plus team, and the 31st on defense, 78th in special teams. This is a team that everything I've looked up, done my research into Louisville, they are just good, solid, good.
Which is, I think, the worst case scenario for a matchup for this USC team in this bowl game.
Yeah, there will be without some of their big guns, which we're going to talk about. Let's talk about on offense for the Louisville Cardinals. They are led at quarterback by Jack Plummer. You might remember him because he threw for 406 yards for the Cal Bears at the Coliseum last November. All ACC third teamer this year, 2,952 yards as the quarterback of the Cards, 21 touchdowns, 11 picks. At running back, Jawar Jordan was their big dude. 181 carries, 1,143 yards, 13 touchdowns at a 6.2 yard per carry clip. All ACC first teamer at running back, but Alicia, he won't be there. Won't be there, Petco.
Opt-outs work both ways.
Yes, and neither will Jamar Thrash, the all-ACC second teamer at receiver and the leading receiver for the Cardinals. 63 catches. Look at me being dyslexic all of a sudden. 858 yards and 6 touchdowns. He will not be there either. So in the running game, look for Isaac Garendo and Maurice Turner, who have combined for about 900 yards as a tandem behind Jordan. So this is a Cardinal, running game that is pretty deep. Garendo is absolutely capable of doing damage. 670 rushing yards, 8 TDs, and a 6.0 yards per carry clip. In the passing game, Chris Bell is next up, but a huge drop-off. Almost 40 fewer catches than Thrash, 26 so far this season, 386 yards and 2 TDs. There's Kevin Coleman Jr., Jimmy Callaway, and their tight end is Nate Kariski. 16 catches, 138 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Offensive line led by all ACC first teamer at center, Brian Hudson. Then there's all ACC third teamer at left guard, Michael Gonzalez. On offense, though, this is a team that just, they do their job. 32nd in SP Plus offense, like we talked about. just a solid top 40 offense in just about every statistic that you look up.
Yeah, they're
going up against a defense that we know at USC that is not good.
Yeah, they're not a prolific passing offense. They're not a prolific running offense, but they do both reasonably well, and they do it in a balanced way, and they are reasonably effective. And I think that's the terrifying thing for USC, because I don't know what you focus on stopping. I do think it is always worth a reflection to think about the quality of quarterback in the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
That Jack Plummer was all ACC third team. That's I'm not trying to speak ill on Jack Plummer, but when he was playing in the Pac-12, he was nowhere near the all Pac-12 lineup at quarterback. So his move to the ACC definitely worked out well for him. And he proved that I think maybe USC fans can maybe reevaluate a little bit the performance that Plummer put up against last year's USC defense. That, you know, the dude can actually sling it when he needs to.
Yeah.
So that's maybe not a great sign for this USC defense coming in to face this Louisville offense that knows what they're about, that does things in a balanced way. And yeah, they're losing their top two skill position guys, and maybe that's the one area that you can hope that the USC defense is able to get an edge. But I don't know how you go into this matchup knowing what we know about this defense,
yeah,
and feel good. Because every game that USC has played, the opposing offense has been better than their averages in general. So
would you say that this offense is better than Cal's? Yes.
Yeah.
Cal scored 49 on the Trojans.
Yeah.
And the Trojans are going to be a defense without some of those starters who played in that game. There's no Damani Jackson here, right? We know that Zion Branch is out for the season.
Kalen Bullock isn't practicing, so we assume
Rajon Davis is out for the season with an injury. Like, yeah. SC has given up a billion points, and there's a lot of dudes that are just, you know, not on the team that gave up the billion points. So, like, I don't. The coaches are not around. Not nearly as many coaches. We got a question in the chat earlier. I can't remember who asked it. I'm sorry. I think it was Calix Rose. No, it was Rama Murdy. Who's coaching the defense in the Holiday Bowl? Is it Danton Lynn? No, it's not Danton Lynn. It's the guy still at SC right now, which is, I believe, is it not Odom still?
Odom's still out there on coaching. I think the only one who has left, and this is an assumption this is me assuming, Dante Williams taking that job with Georgia. I assume he's in Georgia now.
Right.
But everybody else, I think they're finishing out their contracts. So yeah, Odom and Nua, I believe, are still the co-DCs doing the work for the Holiday Bowl. And as far as I understand it, Danton Lynn is not running the show for this bowl. Matt Entz is not coaching the linebackers for this bowl.
Yeah.
And
he hasn't been around. Yeah.
He hasn't been around. And Doug Belk, the new DB's coach, maybe he gets an opportunity to come in, but I would guess instead that somebody is like a graduate assistant. Like, they might just have
these guys aren't coaching. The new guys aren't coaching. They're focusing on recruiting. They might be able to help out with a little bit of, they end up working like an analyst where they can maybe help out with, you know, watching film or whatnot, but they're not going to be on the field coaching.
I would guess that if they needed somebody to step in and make sure that the corners are taken care of, that Bookie Radley Heels is,
yeah,
because Taylor Mays is already doing the safeties for Grinch, but I haven't really heard anything about that. So
yeah, let's talk about the defense of the Cardinals. I'm so used to
Cardinals.
SC playing Stanford. It's weird to say Cardinals. the Cardinals of Louisville, led by Ashton Gillett, over on the defensive end spot. 14 and a half tackles for loss, 11 sacks, 6 quarterback hurries, all ACC first teamer. And then there's Devin Hill, 67 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, and 4 picks, all ACC third teamer at safety. TJ Quinn has been a strong player for the Cardinals at outside linebacker, 87 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, 1 pick, 5 quarterback hurries. The Cardinals on offense, led by defensive coordinator Ron English. Probably know that name because he's been around forever. He was the Michigan DC back in the Lloyd Carr days, 2006, 2007. Those really, really good Michigan teams back then. He left there and went under Charlie Strong at Louisville back in 2008. He got the head coaching job at Eastern Michigan. But that didn't last until 2013. And then, he's been around a little bit since then, ended up following Brom to Purdue and then on to Louisville. So, veteran defensive coordinator, and he's got the Cardinals doing the things that you need to do right on defense. You look at their numbers and the numbers are on the screen right now of like points per drive and stuff like that for this defense. And yards per play and all those things. So much of the stuff is good, not great, like very solid. Top 40 defense in just about every statistic, except for two. And you can argue that these might be the two most important statistics. Louisville, the number one red zone conversion defense and the number 6 third down conversion defense. When push comes to shove, they know how to get stops.
Yeah, it's like the anti-USC.
Yeah.
I don't like this matchup at all, to be quite honest. It doesn't look good for USC. And I'm not trying to be too woe is me because USC won't have Caleb Williams or Marshawn Lloyd. But the wide receiver core is hit with Brendan Rice opting out. The offensive line is hit with Michael Tarquin transferring out and just the offensive line being what it is. The quarterback
Michael Jackson the third transferring.
Michael Jackson the third transferring out. Mario Williams transferring out.
There's a big one too. Caleb Williams, a quarterback, playing. Miller Moss is going to be the starting quarterback for the Trojans. So this is going to be an offense that is really going to have a completely different look.
And I don't think we know what to expect. I have been one of the people beating the drum that Caleb Williams didn't make Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley has had success. His offense is good, regardless of the quarterback that he has running it. But we also haven't necessarily seen his offense be run under these circumstances. And right. I don't know what to expect from Miller Moss. And I don't know what to expect from this offense with Miller Moss behind that offensive line. If USC if you took last year's healthy offensive line and put it in front of Miller Moss for this game, I would feel considerably more confident that USC offensively could go toe to toe with this Louisville defense. But because it's Miller Moss behind this offensive line, I honestly have no idea what to expect. And I think this matchup is terrible for USC specifically because it's not like you can turn around and expect USC to just be able to take some pressure off of Miller Moss by running the ball, because Louisville's good against the run. And Austin Jones, I believe, is playing in this game, but you still need your offensive line to be capable of winning that matchup in the trenches. And I'm just not certain that that's in the cards for USC. But I honestly, I'm not certain that USC is going to show up and be incapable of moving the ball either. It would be a lot more favorable if USC had gotten a draw with a defense that was less stout. Less sound. Yeah. Yes. Again, Louisville has just been a sound team all year. Mm-hmm. And USC would be like, I would have preferred a matchup against a team that was maybe really, really good in one area, but like had as many big question marks as you know, we can point to with USC in a lot of spaces, where what they ended up getting was a very sound ranked team that gives you a lot of like they're 10-3 because they just are sound and maybe not elite, but have gotten the job done. They beat Notre Dame.
Yeah.
They gave Florida State a game. They beat North Carolina, NC State.
So Ron Murdy in the chat says, so then how do we beat Louisville then? And I think the answer is a simple one, but I don't think it's simple to say that makes it maybe overly likely or overly, you know, advantageous or any of those things. I think the simple thing is this Louisville offense was not great against Florida State. That was a very ugly ACC championship game, a game that, you know, Florida State has a very good defense and they could not do anything against them. Right. But that was a Florida State team without their quarterback, and Louisville couldn't do anything against them at all. If you can let them look like that again, then maybe you could have success here. And if any, especially when they're without Jordan and Thrash, I think you can conjure up the idea that like maybe this is a comparable game to say the UCLA game, where you have a good defense and an offense that they can put things together, but maybe they don't have the star power. Certainly Louisville won't have the star power with their top two guys out. But even if you want to make that argument, look back at the SC-UCLA game. SC ends up getting jiggle bagged because they still made their own mistakes. Like UCLA didn't put up as many yards as Oregon did the week before or anything like that, but like they still got theirs. The very simple fact here is that SC needs to A, outscore them, and B, be clean on offense. And if USC is clean on offense, they should be able to get in a position to compete or win the game. I think you can say that about every single, like, even despite the defense, every game USC has had this year, if they are clean on offense, they just about win the game. Like, if they are clean on offense against Washington, they win the game. They weren't, because they had a couple of drives where they did not get it done, especially towards the end of the game, and that cost them. You kind of got to be perfect, and I think that it's hard to be that way when you don't have Caleb Williams at quarterback. You got Miller Moss. You're without guys on the offensive line. You're without some of your best receivers. Yeah, Taj Washington's going to play, but like you're without your best running back. Like this is also the bowl game scenario of like, is SC even going to be up for this? West Texas Mike in the chat says only one bowl win for Lincoln Riley, and that was a Florida team that had given up after taking Alabama to the brink in the COVID season. At the same time, Lincoln Riley has not played in a bowl game like this ever. The Alamo Bowl in 2021 is the closest comparison, but he wasn't there in Oklahoma. He had already left. Like a lot of the staff was there, Odom and whatnot, but like, how is he going to react? Like, are the Trojans going to be even up for this game? I don't know. I like all of those things, I think, are huge, huge question marks. And I think it's clear why SC is a touchdown underdog.
Yeah. I want to draw attention to the bottom right-hand corner of our graphic right now, where it says 10 plus yard gain rate for Louisville's defense. They rank 70th with giving up 10 plus yard gains, 14.7% of the time. They ranked 92nd in 30 plus yard plays allowed this year, which isn't too far better than USC, than USC's defense this year. So how does USC beat Louisville? They hit big plays.
Yeah.
They hit big plays, and the defense, with a month to figure out something, and to maybe recommit to being something, is able to reach their potential, particularly the pass rush, and perhaps unsettles somebody like Jack Plummer enough to create a couple turnovers, and you win the game that way.
Yeah.
For me, I think USC wins the game by creating turnovers on defense and by hitting big plays, by being explosive on offense. And I think that's the biggest question mark around Miller Moss, is can he lead an explosive offense?
Mm-hmm.
I do not know. I know that Caleb Williams can lead an explosive offense.
Yeah.
I do not know if Miller Moss can do that, or if we will see Miller Moss. Like, I think the worst case scenario for USC with Miller Moss is if it's check down city. I don't think that's going to work in terms of being able to actually win the game. So I think that's my biggest problem, is like, there is a roadmap, because Louisville's disappointed too. They wanted to win the ACC. They wanted to spoil. They lost their last two games. Like, we don't know what they're going to look like,
right,
coming into,
and they're without
game.
Their two best players.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's hard to say for sure for either of this team who comes out and is more motivated. I think my guess will be that Louisville will be more motivated.
Yeah. That would be my hunch. But again, like, you never know. I think there's the bowl games are so difficult. Talk about the explosive plays. I think it's interesting looking at what Louisville can do on defense. Yes, they are not good at giving up explosive plays through the pass. They've given up 13 pass plays this year of 40 plus yards. That ranks tied for 118th in the country.
Yeah, and that's where you got to do it.
And they're 100 plus in 20-yard pass plays and 30-yard pass plays and 40-yard pass plays. Yet, if you sort by 10-plus yard pass plays, they're tied for 45th. So, like,
yeah, but this is why,
and they've played an extra game here too. Like they don't
did play an extra game. Yes,
yeah, they give up. They can be gotten downfield, but they don't give up that many medium range pass plays, and which makes me think that is that a sign of a good tackling team? Maybe
that I would wager that. I haven't really looked into it specifically.
I don't know. I haven't thought about the ramifications of those things, but I don't know. It's interesting. I think that there's twofold with the Miller Moss thing. On one hand, I don't have a lot of confidence there. In the sense of, like, we saw him against Cal 2 years ago, situation that is similar, but not really, very much not really. Right. So I don't know what to expect there. The other flip side of this is Miller Moss's opportunity to show out and say something about being the starter for 2024. This is his chance. And on top of that, if you're Lincoln Riley, like, what do you have to lose? Like, get nuts. Like, there's literally nothing to lose in this game. You're the underdog. Everyone expects you to not care and to lose this game, I think. You've already gone 7-6. Obviously, he's not getting fired. Like, does the fan base care enough what the outcome of this game is? I don't necessarily think so. Throw caution to the wind. Like, I think there's a way that you can just come out here and just, yeah, try to zing all over the place and put confidence in Miller Moss. Squint and pretends that Vice's helmet wearing Miller Moss is Caleb Williams, and see what happens. You know, like, I'm very curious what would happen if that was the case. I don't think that they're the similar necessarily the in a similar skill sets. We know that Caleb Williams' game is avoiding the pass rush and all that stuff. He was so good at that. And I don't think that Miller Moss has that in him. But hey, let the dude sink or swim, right? Like, what do you have to lose? Just go out there and let it rip, as Pete Carroll would say. So that's my thought. Ready for, I was just saying this or that. No, this is, what's it called? Over, under.
Mm-hmm.
Ready?
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I got to take an under here. I got three unders to take.
I'm going
to
do an under here.
All right. Let's start. This is a big one, by the way. If you are competing at home, make your picks. Put your picks. We put the link in the chat if you're joining us here live on YouTube. Make your picks because I think G-Pats, who else is involved? Vince from San Diego is in the mix. Who else is in the vault? I should have looked this up. Stephen Schott, I think, is in the top 10. There's a bunch of people in the top 10. I should have been more prepared by having the long list in front of me. But make sure to make your picks. You want to be able to get in there and get a win. Jay Vandy is who I was thinking of too. Yeah. All right. Let's go. Your first over under. What do you got?
I've got 12.5 combined catches for Zion Branch and Deuce Robinson. Zion Branch's season high was 5 against UCLA. Deuce Robinson's was 4 against UCLA. And they go into this game with Brendan Rice and Mario Williams and Michael Jackson III all out of the picture.
Yeah.
George Washington will play, so he remains wide receiver 1. But Zachariah Branch and Deuce Robinson will be focal points for this offense. So will they combine for a dozen or more?
More than a dozen. Baker, you want a Baker's dozen to clear the over. I am going to say no. I'm going to take the under on this, under the 12 and a half catches. West Texas Mike in the chat says Riley rotates too much. Yeah, I think there's going to be too much rotation. I think on the then again, the rotation is much thinner. But I... 12 and a half just seems like so much.
It does.
Seems like so much. How many times did anyone combine for 12 and a half catches this year?
I didn't go.
You know what I mean? Like, I think it's very difficult.
Here's the thing. Brendan Rice had 8 catches against UCLA.
Yeah.
Taj Washington is good for 4 or 5 in a game. Like,
right.
There's going to be additional targets to go around, but
this
then again
could be the Zachariah Branch game where you just give him the ball a billion times.
Yeah, they were at 9. I almost set the line at 10, but they were at 9 against UCLA with Brendan Rice and Mario Williams and Michael Jackson getting targeted. So yeah. Ooh. I don't know. I like it's
all right. I'm gonna take the under, but I'm intrigued by that line for sure. So give me the under 12 and a half combined catches for Zachariah Branch and Deuce Robinson. My first over under, it's going to be a nice one. 69% over under 69% USC in the red zone conversion rate against Louisville's defense. Mentioned it earlier. Louisville's defense, number 1 in the nation in red zone defense at 68.97%, AKA 69%. USC is 31st nationally at 89.1%. At one point, they were really good. Like, I think SC was like number 1 in the country in touchdown rate going in the end zone. That took a hit at the end of the season. The Trojans had a season worst 50% overall red zone rate against UCLA, going 2 of 4. That was bad. That was big part of the reason why USC did not win the game and lost the victory bell to the Bruins. So can the Trojans score more than Louisville holds teams to? 69% over under USC's red zone conversion rate.
Smashing that under. No Caleb Williams, no Brendan Rice, USC's best red zone target all season.
Yep.
This is a hard under. I have no other feeling. There was only one place I was going with this under.
Kicking at sea level at a baseball stadium?
Mm-hmm.
Might be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You take the under there, which locks me into the over. What's your next over under? What do you got?
We are going with 32.5 pass attempts for Miller Moss.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams averaged 32 attempts per game this year. He had three games with 40 or more attempts against UCLA, Cal, and Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
He had four games with under 30 attempts against San Jose State, Nevada, Stanford, and Arizona. The first three of those are no surprise. He barely played in those games. Miller Moss has attempted 32 total passes this season.
Mm-hmm.
But USC quarterbacks just across the board with everybody average 34 passes per game in wins and 37 per game in losses. So will we see Miller Moss get up there in volume the way that we would see Caleb Williams, or is USC going to lean on their running game and have a more self-contained situation from Miller Moss?
I'm pessimistic. I took the over. I was thinking I took the under on this. The graphics say I took the over, so I'll take the over. Okay. Realistically, I'm pessimistic on this one bigly because number one,
if USC's behind,
I think that's my argument more than anything. I think that was the reason that I took the over this here. I think that SC could get creative in getting Zachariah Branch involved plenty. That might mean like jet sweeps or something like that. It could mean that if those get counted as passes, I think that helps. But I think that I think realistically the best argument for taking the over here is I don't expect USC to win this game. Spoiler alert to when we get to the scores. And so I think that you might just end up with the over because SC is trailing.
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair. I don't know what to expect from Miller Moss in the slightest. I just do not.
Yeah. All right. My next one is going to be over under 39.5% USC's third down conversion rate. Louisville is sixth in the country on third down defense, holding teams to just 28.1%. Only three of their opponents this year, Georgia Tech, BC, and Miami, went above 40% on their conversion rates. So only three of the 12 of the 13 opponents would have hit the over here, but SC is averaging 42.1%, and they've hit on 40% six times in their 12 games. Trojans ranked 44th in third down conversion rate, over or under 39.5 third downs for USC.
I do not like this for USC. I am taking the under. Again, I do not know what to expect from Miller Moss. I sort of knew what to expect from Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
He could create some magic, get USC up with a higher percentage in terms of converting third downs. I do not know if USC will be able to run the ball well in the early downs to create third and short situations. So Miller Moss may be in those situations where he has to create some magic, and I don't know if that's something that he will be capable of doing. I just, there's so many unknowns when it comes to this, and Louisville's defense is so good at this. I am taking the under hard again.
All right. Let's get to your last over under. What do you got?
Totally coincidentally, I have 39.5 Louisville third down conversion.
Louisville.
Great.
Louisville.
I put 39.4.
Okay. You put it's the same difference.
Okay.
Close enough.
Louisville. Third down rate. So Louisville's kind of bad at third downs offensively. They rank 92nd nationally with a third down conversion rate this season of 36.42. That's not good. So it should tell you USC's defense
is even worse,
allowing 43.2% rate third downs is pretty darn bad.
Yikes.
Ranking 108th nationally. So, bad bad third down offense meet bad third down defense.
Right.
I took the two numbers. I split the difference down the middle. We got 39.4.
Mm-hmm.
And
you just wanted to steal my line.
Good luck there.
Yeah, you just stole my line. I am taking the over.
Yeah.
I I trust
them.
I trust USC's defense to not get the stops.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very pessimistic over under.
I don't know how there's any other way to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I just don't.
All right. Well, then I'm going to really test you. The absolute biggest shitpost of the over unders lines of all time. 388 passing yards for Jack Plummer. I'm not sure I'd put this line for Bo Nix, but I'm putting it for Jack Plummer. He had a career high last year of 406 passing yards against the Trojans with Cal at the Coliseum in November. His season high this year was 388 in a win over BC. So 388.5. Will he set a season high for the second straight year against USC? USC pass defense is 117th in the country. 388. 0.5. This is an absolute bait job. Are you taking it?
I am taking this with confidence.
Pessimistic Alicia is out in full force.
USC's defense has given me no reason to trust them in any way, shape, or form. Wow. And they will be without arguably their most talented player in the secondary, Kalen Bullock, in this game. They will be, I mean, I guess the only hope I have for USC's defense in terms of stopping the pass is that, you know, guys like Jacoby Covington might be healthy. I just don't trust anything that's going on with defense. I'm taking the over.
And, pessimistic Alicia is out in full force.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right. That locks me into the under. I think it's a pretty good under for me to have, but we will see. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? All right. That's going to be it for over under, which leads us into our picks for the Holiday Bowl, USC and Louisville. Lock and horns, December 27th, 5:14 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Petco Park, Gas Lamp, San Diego. Alicia, the line, 7.5 for Louisville. SP Plus projection is Cardinals 33, Trojans 20. Sorry, 30. 33-30 is the SP Plus projection. What's your prediction? What do you got?
I am going with Louisville 30, USC 20.
Okay.
I do not think USC's offense will be able to, just given circumstances, will be able to get much going against this Louisville defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not trust USC's defense at all. The only thing that's stopping me from giving Louisville more points here is that Louisville's offense has just been exactly what they are, which is just 30 points.
Yeah.
So who knows? They could put up 40, but for now, I'm just going 30 to 20.
All right. You're picking the cards to cover. Alicia, you wrote your projection in here after I did. And I'm not going to say that you stole my prediction, because you didn't.
I didn't even look at your prediction. I looked at Bill Connolly's.
But it's very similar.
Yeah.
I have Louisville winning this 27-17. So I, too, have the cards covering. What it comes down to me is, here's the thing with bowl games. You have to prove to me that you want it, a bowl game. Which is sad to me, because like I understand why players opt out. I understand why players are already leaving for their transfers. I understand all of that. Like, this is the world that we're in with college football. It has to sort of be that way logistically. But the college football fan in me hates it, because I grew up on bowl games. Holiday Bowl was always such a special bowl game for me as a kid. It was always so good. Now it's a game that no one wants to be in. I think that changes for Louisville a little bit here, because they've never been to the Holiday Bowl, never played USC. Louisville's a program that I think is still on the up and up, and they're in a good place with Jeff Brohm. And I think there's just more reason for them to want to be there than SC, coming after a year in which they went 7-5, a year in which all the focus is on 2024. all the focus is on next year with the transfer portal, signing day, all that stuff. The new coaches. I feel like the game, the Holiday Bowl game, is the last thing that people are thinking of. So with that in mind, SC loses by 10, 27-17, Cardinals.
Yep.
Oh boy. If you're on your way down, you've probably already driven by the Denny's, probably the Denny's right there in San Clemente. And you might need to turn us off, because I think people are upset about
this. No. This is just a good reminder that when doing a trip for a bowl game or a football game, you need to always remember that you will not let the outcome of the game impact your enjoyment of
the That's a good idea.
Enjoy the crap out of the lead up to the game.
Yeah.
And after the game, put it out of your mind, because it ultimately doesn't matter. You're just there to have fun.
It's one of the world's great cities too.
Yeah. Enjoy your tailgate. Go get some hodads.
How much tailgating is it? Petco.
Well, I don't know. Enjoy your pregame meal or wherever you're going to hang out.
Pre-gaming in the gas lamp.
Enjoy pre-gaming in the gas lamp. Enjoy going out after.
Even think about it. There is no tailgating. When was the last time SC was in a game when there was no tailgating? I don't know. COVID. The COVID season. Yeah. Jesus. I guess that's the answer. Recommendations for San Diego remain Hodads. Please go to Hodads. Go to Hodads. There's one downtown. There's also one in Ocean Beach. The one in Ocean Beach, I think, is really cool. Go to Hodads. Get a burger. I'd say tell them that we sent you, but they don't know who the hell we are, so don't do that. But Hodads is so incredible. Best burger you'll ever have in your life, I swear to God. And this is not paid for by Hodads.
No.
And then my other recommendation, if you've never been, I know everybody talks about the zoo. I'm sorry, but I'm a wild animal park guy. No, I think they changed the name of the wild animal park.
I've never been.
You never been? Dude, we got to go. We got
to
go.
I've been to the zoo.
Oh, the wild animal park is so much better. Well, I don't know that it's better than the zoo, because that's literally the best zoo in the world, but the wild animal park freaking bangs. West Texas Mike says, but you don't like anything on your burgers. Isn't that not true? I like a bread, meat, cheese.
He's pretty spot on there.
Bread, meat, you're forgetting mayo. Yeah. I like mayo on my burger.
West Texas Mike, when I went to Hodad's, I got a burger with stuff on it, and it was the best burger I've ever eaten. And I don't really necessarily care for a lot of stuff on my burgers.
A Cortman 17 in the chat says they change everything about the wild animal park. I don't like that.
Well.
Oh no.
Well, what can you do?
Now I'm scared to go back. It's the San Diego Zoo Safari Park now, apparently. Uh-oh. Used to be great, not just them taking your money. Yeah.
That's welcome to life.
Yeah. No kidding. All right. We got a couple of questions on the mailbag, but not much here.
You've got mail.
Michael Enright says, how many defensive transfers will start? None of them. It's all 2024 guys.
I think they're talking about next year.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh.
I would wager all of them right now, looking at the defensive transfers, which I'll run down, where you got, Vanderbilt's Nate Clifton on the defensive line, linebacker Easton Mascarenhas Arnold, safety Akili Arnold, safety Kamari Ramsey and cornerback John Humphrey. I would wager that all of those are written in pen starters next year. I think I guess the one that maybe isn't is Clifton. Like, that's the only one that I would say if he turned out to be this year's
the spot that has the most rotation too.
Yeah, but if he turned out to be this year's Jack Sullivan, then
sure.
That's I think a possibility. You don't want that to be the case, but that's a possibility for sure.
I was gonna say DeCarlos Nicholson could be someone.
DeCarlos Nicholson.
Because you're getting Humphrey and Nicholson, but then again, I would assume that those are both going to be the two corners that you're putting a lot of faith in.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens with the Trojans at corner. We know that Fabian Ross is gone. Damani Jackson is gone. Yeah, we'll see. Christian Romero-Rollins is gone. We'll see what happens.
I'm a big fan of Jacoby Covington.
Yeah, me too.
So he might be the one that throws a wrench in, yeah, how that works, but
yeah, I'm a fan of Jacoby Covington for everything but the spelling. I'm not a fan of the spelling.
Yeah,
I get a Y at the end. The B, the kind of like Kobe, kind of.
Yeah, it is kind of like Kobe with the C though.
With a C, yeah. Yeah. Robin Murray says, any update on Will Howard, or did he already commit? I haven't seen anything.
He is not committed. There are multiple sites have predictions that he will sign with USC. That is obviously something that's being sorted out, I guess. There's a lot of complications around bringing in quarterbacks, especially in terms of how you work out your NIL deal and all of that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. Not that surprised that maybe it might take a little while longer.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see with Will Howard.
We will see indeed. The other news we kind of buried is Corey Foreman, transfer portal.
Yes. Another 5-star that it's like, okay, so what was the point of getting that 5-star in the recruiting class and celebrating it when you couldn't do anything with him? So he'll always have that UCLA interception. He was out of position.
Okay. Here's an honest question. I mean this with no ill intent here. Is he the biggest USC recruiting bust with a highlight ever?
With an actual game-changing play?
Yes. Whitney Lewis never did a damn thing.
I mean, that's a good point. Yeah. Like, Wole Batiku never had
his moment
nearly as big as that.
No.
And then they like wide receiver.
I feel like Osa Messina doesn't count here.
No.
Osa Messina had a scoop and score, I think, against Arkansas State, or maybe almost scored against Arkansas State. But that's a different scenario. Same thing with Bryce Dixon, who had a big touchdown pass or big touchdown catch. But like, again, that's not remotely the same situation. No,
yeah.
No. Jack Jones, I wouldn't call a recruiting bust.
No.
God, is there anyone with a weirder career than Jack Jones?
Literally, no. Literally,
the
no.
Highlight of the pick that the pick on. Six he had the other day,
yeah,
insane. Yeah.
After he got run out of New England, ends up with Antonio Pierce in Vegas, and then has one of the more impressive picks that you'll see all season.
Might be the most impressive interception I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, yeah, that's the Jack Jones experience.
It's high or low, baby. It's
no one ever accused him of lacking.
Jeez, talent. It is up and down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. This is going to wrap it up. Thank you everybody for listening this year. It's been great. We'll be back, of course, with the CarCast after the game. I think the plan right now is that we're not going to the game. We've debated with the idea of maybe driving down there day of.
It will genuinely come down to when I think on Tuesday, we will reevaluate about whether or not we're just going to make an impromptu trip or not.
Yeah.
So yeah.
We'll see. MIT Caltech in the chat says the problem with those 4- and 5-star players who transfer is that they have low football IQ. So we'll be fine. MIT Caltech mentioning IQ in a chat might be the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Yes. I can't necessarily speak 100% to whether or not it's a low football IQ situation for all of them. But I will say that they are prime examples of how your evaluation has to be multifaceted, has to be factored in.
Let's say it is. Let's just hypothetically say that low football IQ. Okay. Well, then what can you get out of them as a coach?
That's, you have to work within.
You have to get out. You can get more out of them than what SC got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And too many times SC has guys who they just are unable to get anything out of.
Yeah.
And yes, I think you can say that some of those players might have been, you know, overvalued in recruiting or whatnot. And not every five-star ends up panning out. Yes, it's probability. Those guys are most likely to pan out, but doesn't mean that they're all for sures. Having said that, SC has just had too many of those guys not pan out that it's, you can't point like the finger. You point the finger at them and there's three other fingers pointing back at you, pointing back at the coaches. It's more about SC's lack of developing for me. Like, yeah, there's been a bunch of busts, but also you can't tell me that all of them needed to be bust either. So
yeah,
and let's just say, okay, let's just say that they are low football IQ guys. Then was the evaluation incorrect
saying.
In the first place? Like you said, like
I
still comes down to the coaching to me.
I think there's a very strong, there's a strong correlation between coaching ability and, number one, identifying that players have, if it's a low football IQ situation, identifying that that is going to be an insurmountable problem is a huge value. Having a culture that's strong enough to deal with, maybe it's not a low football IQ, but like low commitment to being great. Identifying that,
sure,
or having a culture to overcome it,
yeah,
preferably both. All of those things factor into why a five star doesn't work out. So yes, it remains on the coaching staff, to get that right. That's something that USC's staff in future has to get right more often.
All right, before we wrap up, Mount Rushmore of Christmas movies, go.
Love Actually, It's a Wonderful Life, A Christmas Story, and I feel like I'm missing a big one. Why am I missing a big one? Love Actually, It's a Wonderful Life, A Christmas Story, and I'm gonna put it in because I want to watch it at Christmas. The Last Holiday with Queen Latifah. It is one of my all-time favorites.
No thanks.
This is where I admit I've never seen Christmas Vacation, and Elf is just
fine. Elf sucks. Elf is absolute trash. I've never seen Home Alone and have zero interest in seeing Home Alone.
Home Alone's good.
Slapstick comedy, not for me, And B, like, it looks like a dumb kids movie. Don't care. West Texas Mice says, Eyes Wide Shut. Does take place at Christmas. Yeah, for sure. the other one is that I do not care about any of the Grinches. Not interested. Don't care. Doesn't look like a Michael movie to me.
They're fine.
There's a definitive Mount Rushmore here, and it's A Christmas Story, Love Actually, Bad Santa, which is the best movie of any involving any Santa Claus, is Bad Santa. Do I remember that you said that you haven't seen it?
I have seen it.
Okay, you have seen it. Okay. Yeah. All right. I got really excited because I thought I was going to be able to watch it again if you said no. But okay. And then About a Boy, which is people want to say that Die Hard is a Christmas movie, which it's not, and it's not even a good action movie. But secondly, if that's the argument, then I'm going to make About a Boy a Christmas movie. Okay, I'm making it one. Part of the plot is literally that it involves a Christmas song, so it's a Christmas movie, baby. It's a Christmas movie.
It's fine.
It's fine. You liked it when you watched it.
No, it's good. It's good. It's just not on my Mount Rushmore of Christmas movies.
Yeah. Lamont says, how dare you? Elf is phenomenal. Bad Santa is good. Bad Santa is the best. the absolute best. Plus, the reason that Bad Santa also, I genuinely, it makes me die laughing every single time. But the reason that Bad Santa is even better to me than anything else is because it was filmed at the Lummel Mall pre.
Of course.
I mean, I know you're going to say bias, but genuinely, even if it wasn't, even if it was actually filmed in Phoenix like it was supposed to, it's still incredible.
I need to watch it again.
And it has an SD connection, John Ritter.
I don't remember it. I know I've seen it. I don't remember. I don't know if I was paying close attention to watching it. But one of the podcasts I really love did that as their episode this week, Bad Santa. They were talking about it and made me realize that, like, I don't remember very much of the movie, so I should probably rewatch it.
Oh, yeah.
West Texas Mike in the chat says, wait, Alicia didn't talk about USC men's basketball. One more chance to take a shot at Andy Enfield. You want me to talk about the 6-5 USC basketball team? You want me to talk about the USC basketball team that lost 3 in a row and then beat up on Alabama State to make it not look so terrible? You want to talk about the USC basketball team that is theoretically as talented as USC basketball has ever been and yet still falls victim to the same problems every year? The same basketball team that can't hit free throws, the same basketball team that can't defend, the same basketball team that relies on basically ISO offense at all times. You want me to talk about that basketball team? I'm not going to, because I don't watch that basketball team, because I know what's going to happen and I don't
Alicia,
be angry.
I am closing out tabs as we're wrapping up the pod here.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the tabs I had open was the ACC all conference teams. Do you know who the ACC all third team tight end is?
Was it Malcolm Epps?
No. Jake Brinningstool.
Brinningstool. That's a name.
I thought Master Boney was the worst name I've ever heard in my life.
Brinningstool.
I would need to go into witness protection. Like, I'd find a way to go into witness protection and get a new identity name was Brinningstool.
That is a name. That is certainly a name with, like, syllables.
Brinningstool. Are you having a laugh? Brinningstool.
We got a super chat from West Texas Mike. He clearly loved my USC basketball rant. Cheers.
Big ups to West Texas Mike. He also said he was going to go to Hodad's, just not this weekend. So that's good.
Yeah. Might be good to avoid this weekend because we may be busy.
Yeah. Hodad's is usually a place where you got to wait outside anyway. Yeah. Yep. So, all right. We will be back with a car cast. Thank you guys so much for everything. We could not do this without you guys. Merry Christmas and happy any holiday that you celebrate. Happy Festivus coming up tomorrow and so much more. So until then, we will see ya.
See ya.
All right, Jesse, podcast is over. You didn't even move.
Is out, actually.
All right, let's try again. All right. See ya.
See ya.
Oh, there she goes. Now she knows. All right. See ya. Bye.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.